Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back as my guest Robbie Holtz. If you look in the archives, you can see our interview with Robbie on Secrets of Aboriginal Healing. This is a chronicle of her late husband's journey, being called to Australia in a very interesting manner, and his healing from a chronic disease, as well as his journey as a healer. This book we're going to talk about today is Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening, a Journal of Healing and Spirituality with a Remote Australian Tribe. I think it's well known from other authors that the Aboriginal Australian people have access to a much different, I guess what we would call reality slash dream time slash consciousness that they use on a daily basis to communicate, to help with healing, to navigate their lives. And this is a viewpoint into that world, as well as into the ways that we would be able to access this kind of information and way of living. Thanks, Robbie, for joining us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, would you like to give the audience a little bit of your background and how you came to write these two books?
Sure. Well, you know, I ended up having a rough delivery 31 years ago with my son, and I had a blood transfusion that had hepatitis C in it. And so the hepatitis almost killed me, and then the experimental treatment that they put me on back then almost killed me. This was 30 years ago, so things were quite different. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the doctors didn't have any answers for me, and I was left in pretty bad shape. I had treatment-induced brain damage. I couldn't finish a sentence. I couldn't remember what I was talking about. I couldn't get out of bed for at least 9 months. Walking to the mailbox was out of my realm. And I was determined to find answers to survive because I had this little boy. So I discovered that there's, even though Western medicine didn't have anything for me, that there's all kinds of answers out there. And I since healed myself of the hepatitis C and the fibromyalgia and the brain damage and the chronic fatigue syndrome that all came about through this experience. And that really put me on the path of just passionately waking people up to the fact that they are incredible healers, whether they know it or not. Your body wants to heal. You are very, very powerful in that ability. And just letting them know that there's a lot of hope and that that body knows how to heal itself. It wants to heal itself. We need to figure out what's blocking that healing from happening.
Yeah, that's so true. So many of us, including myself, have really gotten on this path because of personal health challenges. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like you've got to navigate through with your intuition what is real and what isn't before you can help others.
Exactly. I'm sure that's why this happened to me, is I needed to sort of be in the trenches, live it myself, so that then I could teach other people. I have no doubt of that. And it's really, you know, I love what you just said. It, you know, you got to follow that intuition. And does it feel right? Some of these treatments that the doctors suggest, or some of these drugs, does it feel right? Because your body doesn't lie, and it's trying to tell you something. So you really have to pay attention to that.
Yeah, and I would encourage people to explore applied kinesiology. Muscle testing is very well established treatment. Oh, I'm sorry, diagnostic and method for determining what treatments will be okay for the individual. You know, there's so much about medicine we don't understand that I think muscle testing is very, very important. There's just so many factors out there that we're not aware of, including, you know, what's right in front of us in terms of what we're going to go through. I have a story, you know, I'm a plastic surgeon, so I had a patient with an infected breast implant that we had her on antibiotics, so she was okay, but this isn't good. You know, she needs the implant out. But she wouldn't muscle test for surgery, you know, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, when I could get her in. It was like, no, no, no. Well, what happened, and I believe muscle testing accesses the higher dimensions where outside of space and time, what happened is a tree fell on her house, and of course it rained, and there was mold all over her house, and she was sensitive to mold, so this would have been bad during recovery. Mm. Her parents got sick in California, and her car broke down. So, you know, all of these things would not have allowed surgery to take place easily. Surgery was delayed, and then she had surgery later when she was able to, and we just kept her on antibiotics. I mean, it's not ideal, but you can get by with that. So what I tell people is, you know, probably sociopaths aren't going to muscle test as well all the time, but people who are in communication with their higher self and their guardian angels and guides, muscle testing is something that will really help you plan out what to do and also warn you of things that could happen. It's interesting. I've been muscle testing for years, and allergic reactions that are new won't always show up. It's interesting. There must be some sort of thing that's not definite there. But if you have had an allergic reaction, say I had a patient who had an anaphylactic reaction to vancomycin, and every time I tested him for vancomycin, of course it was silent. He didn't know. You know, we did it on little pieces of paper. He was very, very weak, extremely weak. And he would, when he undid the paper, he would just say voodoo to me. You know, how did the ones that he was supposed to take were very strong, but that vanco was always very, very weak. Because if he had been given it again, he would have another anaphylactic reaction, most likely, you know, because it's IV and it's definitely bad. So I would encourage people to explore muscle testing and use that for their own information about what to do and what not to do.
I couldn't agree more. I use muscle testing for everything, all the time. And I'll ask with muscle testing what supplements I should be taking.
Me too.
How many. If I go to the store, there's such a huge array, and I will muscle test which one does my body want, because everybody's different and it changes. Yes, absolutely.
And it does change. You're right. You know, I just did that online on my Facebook thing with all the women with breast implant problems. I told them, you know, at first you have a magnesium deficiency, so you have to take more. But then when you catch up, you don't have to take so much, you know. I mean, you do have to keep checking.
Right, yes, and make sure that, like you said, that the ego isn't involved in this, that you're not, some of these questions that you're asking, you want to make sure that you're not trying to sway the answers. But I use it for everything, and especially people come to me for, they know that they need to get the emotional root to their illness. They need to find out what that is, and I tap into this higher consciousness through muscle testing to find out what is that emotional core, what is that emotional root, and there's nothing you can't ask with it. You just have to make sure that your ego mind isn't trying to sway the answers. But for the most part, I don't find that's a problem.
I have an interesting way of muscle testing that is really, really great for running this business, and that's my manager. I do it silently, but use her arm, okay? In other words, she doesn't know what I'm asking. I ask it silently. So I say, give me a yes, and then it's strong. Give me a no, it's weak. And then I start asking questions. And it's super, super accurate, because there's no way for me to influence it or her to influence it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause she doesn't hear the question.
Sure.
And it's not my arm, okay?
Right.
You know, but that has been extremely good for questions regarding the business.
Do you have a way that you use just yourself?
That's harder because you don't have that thing I just told you about, which is taking yourself out of it. When I don't tend to use my own muscle testing, except that I will always check with another method, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I just really don't rely on that. I have people around me all the time that can muscle test me, and I also work with a group of my meditation group where we check each other. So there's just no reason for me to just rely on my own testing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's usually accurate, but because it involves personal stuff, it's you do have, you know, things that you would prefer. And I do want to mention something that I just read online that I think is very important. You know, when things happen to us, say that, you know, you're on their way to the airport and you get in a situation where you're late and you miss your plane, or, you know, something, you're on your way to do something and something stops you. We have to really analyze those situations. We have to ask questions about why that happened. Spirit's reminding us that roadblocks are put in our way for reasons. And so when you can't find, you know, something that you think you need, you need to find out why that roadblock is there. And muscle testing is a good way to do that. But, I mean, it may be that you're supposed to do that, but you're just not supposed to do it right now. Or, you know, that there was, we've all heard the stories, 9/11 was full of them, about people who didn't get where they were supposed to go because of all these roadblocks. And you just have to remember that there's a whole bunch more going on than what we realize, and that when we have roadblocks, either because we can't find what we think we need or where we think we're supposed to go, there's reasons for that.
And I've got a story about that. I like to muscle test for everything, and I was muscle testing which is the better route for me to take. There were two options for me, and I was deliberately given one route, and I took that route, and I was surprised. There's construction here. I'm sitting here waiting, and I was having to tune in. Okay, why did this route, was this route given to me as the better route?
Right.
And I was told in my head that I got that feeling, that sense, because we want you to slow down. And this is a perfect way to get our point across. Yeah. So I didn't ask the question, which is the fastest route? I asked which is the better route. So you really have to be very succinct and clear what you're asking.
Yeah, the it's very true that, and I've noticed this more like just in this week, I almost always have the thought that something is going to happen or something's going to go wrong before it does. I mean, it's really very strange. I mean, I can sort of see where we're going to.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's going to be revealed to us that needs to be revealed to us beforehand. But it's so quick. The thought is so quick that it's hard to grasp onto it. So I think part of spiritual development is really slowing down, and that's why I wanted to mention it to you. We have to slow down these impressions so that we can grasp them. And if we're going too fast, we won't be able to slow them down.
That's an excellent point. Yes, I'm finding that all the time. If I pay attention when I muscle test, I can feel the answer just a split second before I muscle test. It's there.
Right.
You just have to slow down to feel it. And on my path, you know, I've been on this path for a while, and I keep learning the same things over and over. Slow down, quiet the mind, simplify.
Quiet the mind.
Yeah, just really simplify and just pay attention. Yeah.
You're on transmit all the time, when you're thinking, you can't receive this information. You can't transmit and receive at the same time, because this is very much like radio waves, this interdimensional communication.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized that I was on receive because a friend of mine was saying, "What are you thinking?" He was kind of annoying. You know, I was around him and he was going, "What are you thinking?" And then when I would think about what I'm thinking to answer him, I would say, "I'm not thinking, you know, nothing." It's not, I mean, I'm just on receive. I'm not thinking. So if you can go around on receive, then you can get these very important pieces of information because you're set up to receive them. And the more you meditate, the more I believe you are able to receive this information.
And what I like about meditation, some people have a negative, you know, knee-jerk reaction to it, like they do the word exercise. But meditation, as you know, is just simply quieting the mind. And you can do that by simply really focusing on what you're doing. I mean, washing the dishes and being very focused and centered and present with washing those dishes, where you're smelling the bubbles, you're, you know, feeling the slipperiness on the dishes. That can be a meditation because it's not letting the mind take you off into its, you know, stories and chattiness. And I think that what I'm learning about meditation is that, first of all, we know how it's really addictive because it brings you back into this peaceful, content, and blissful state and lets that mind sort of, you know, deflate for a little bit. But I'm taking it more out into my life. You know, you may get 20 minutes of quiet here, and then you'll find that you just start bringing that into your daily life more, where you just get more present, more in the present moment and more aware, more conscious. So it's a fabulous practice that I highly recommend. It doesn't have to be a big deal. It can be, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, but start somewhere.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about how the Aboriginal secrets relate to that concept. How have they tapped into that in a way that is utilitarian for them? And, you know, what? Let's talk a little bit about how that, because that is really, they talk about something called dream time, and it's an altered state of consciousness where all of this is possible.
Well, the more I recognize what the wisdom that the Aborigines, the remote Aborigines in the outback of Australia, the more I actually integrate that into my life, the better my life gets. I really believe that these remote Aboriginal people in the outback are really enlightened, very awake, and really advanced in so many ways, because they have learned how to really unplug from the mind and really plug into this greater consciousness. And they start doing it at about the age of 3 or 4. And they'll spend more than half of their time unplugged from the mind and plugged into this greater consciousness. And they will, you could call it meditation, you can call it dream time, but basically they're not letting the mind run them. And they will go into these different dimensions or whatever you want to call it and create the reality that they want. And they'll tell you that that's much more real than the illusion that we live in. So they will actively create, and that's called quantum physics. And they'll tell you that we civilized tribes really don't know how to go in and really use our subconscious minds. We're just on autopilot with these chatty, busy minds having their way with us, often in a very negative fashion. And that's what, as you know, creates a lot of this disease. So the Aborigines are, I think, they don't have the distractions, and they have learned how to use the mind when they need it, but for the most part, really spend a lot of time into these other realms, which is tapping into all the access of the intelligence of the universe. It's all there. It's available to all of us.
Well, give some examples to our listening audience about some of the information and, I guess, states of mind that can be accessed. What do they use it for? How do they benefit from this?
Well, they live in a what I would consider to be a very harsh environment. I think we all would.
Not a lot of water and
everything. So they'll tap into this greater consciousness to find out where the water is. They'll find out where what plants will heal what. They will, you know, actively go. Like somebody gave me the example, they will become the tree. It's amazing how tuned in they are to everything, because they've never lost that connection. They've always felt that oneness. They've never lost it. Where we lost it when we started to speak out loud. That's when we lost this connection to the planet. We could no longer hear the trees speaking. We couldn't, you know, hear the mountains conversing. We've lost that, and they've never lost that. So this is why they love going in and tapping into these realms, and they just have a much better awareness than we do.
You know, it's so interesting that the tribes around the world that have this ability, you know, some of the shamans down in South America, some of the shamans in Africa, the Aborigines in Australia, are very peaceful people. They don't engage in war. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I think that they live a very different life. They don't, everything is very community oriented. They don't have,
right,
like the Aborigines don't have a possessive word. They don't have a,
right,
a my.
Mine,
or,
yeah.
Yeah, or your. They don't,
right,
because it's all one, and they don't have, they're not into competition or judging.
There's no scarcity, so why would you be in this competition? If you need,
yeah,
something, you ask where it is and you go get it. Think,
right,
about that.
Right.
There's
and
no scarcity. The scarcity is a concept.
Exactly.
You know, that if I don't have enough, so I have to take it from you through warlike behavior. I mean, if there is no scarcity, which I believe there isn't. I mean, I,
right,
believe scarcity is created.
Right.
I mean, it's,
yes,
deliberately because it separates us.
Right.
And, I mean, if you study the history of mankind, I read Michener when I was in high school, and there's a book called Poland, and it just chronicles the wars in Europe. I mean, these people would build up a community, and every 50 years they'd have it destroyed by war. I mean, you can't build anything, because,
yeah,
within 50 or 100 years, it's just going to be burned or torn down or taken away from you, whatever. We have an incredibly brutal, you know, and even some of the more aboriginal tribes, like the Native Americans, many of the Native American tribes were very warlike. You know, there were very peaceful ones as well, but like the Aborigines. But the history of war is just continuous. And as long as you have that reality, you'll have tremendous scarcity. You'll have tremendous suffering. You'll have disease. You'll have all these horrible things happening. And we really haven't gotten that far away from it. I mean, in the U.S. we have. We're not, every 50 years, you know, our cities aren't being burned, except maybe, you know, the inner cities during civil unrest. But it's, you know, we're still, in certain parts of the world, things are just getting torn down and people are fighting over ridiculous, you know, things that really are, it will never be resolved. There's no resolution to them, you know.
Well, and I think what they, like the remote Aboriginals in the outback, I think they're living in these higher vibrational states.
They're
in these higher frequencies, and they are very much about love and being in service to each other. There's,
mm-hmm,
no, there's acceptance. There's no judging, any negativity,
right,
or, and they. That's a different state, and I think that that's where we're heading on a planetary basis, was we're moving into these higher vibrational,
mm-hmm,
states, higher awakening. And then,
right,
you let go of this, the greed and the competition and the judging and being so, you know, centered about your needs. And that's why,
mm-hmm,
I think that the Aborigines have so much to teach us, because they're there. They have moved into that, and they can tell you where we're getting stuck, where we're getting hung up. And one of the things that they'll tell us is that you civilized tribes really hang on to stuff. You don't let it go. They know that everything that comes to them, as we talked earlier, is very deliberate. Everything that happens, there's nothing random or a misfit or an accident.
Mm-hmm.
It's very deliberate, and it's here as a gift. If you just recognize that there's something there to help you grow and learn. So they,
mm-hmm,
know that everything that comes to them has something to teach them. And they recognize that, and then they let it go, and then open up to the next experience. Whereas a lot of us have hung on to things that we've not liked, our human minds haven't liked, and we,
mm-hmm,
continue to carry them and create stories and carry them around, and it becomes baggage, and it really becomes really harmful to the body, because, as you know, we carry this stuff on ourselves, and it needs to be released. So I think that there's a lot that they can tell us. And you know, the Aborigines, I love how they don't really promote the ego. When a hunter comes in with food, that hunter is the last one to eat. But then the,
mm-hmm,
next time someone brings in food, the hunter from the previous time is the first to eat. And,
mm-hmm,
if they have a special event where you are honored, every now and then there's something where they honor you, then the,
mm-hmm,
next day they make sure that you probably do the lowliest job so that your ego,
mm-hmm,
doesn't get inflated. Whereas,
right,
we live in a very different culture. If you watch what's on television, there's,
mm-hmm,
it's just extreme competition against each other, and that only,
mm-hmm,
continues to foster us into dangerous situations where we're not joining together as a community. We're just continuing to judge and compare. Not a good thing.
Yeah, that's very true. It seems that the Aborigines also use this for telepathic communication. Would you like to comment on that?
Sure. Well, they're telepathic to everything. It's very mm-hmm. interesting how they, like I said, they've never lost that because they never started speaking out loud. They think that speaking out loud is very chaotic. It's very primitive. And that mm-hmm. being telepathic is the old language that we used to do, and we've lost it because we started speaking out loud. We can't feel it, that connection as strongly. And mm-hmm. it's interesting how every now and then I run across people who have still maintained that telepathy, and they can mm-hmm. tell you that the trees, when they acknowledge them, are so grateful that they're being acknowledged and being sent mm-hmm. gratitude. And I love how, you know, a lot of these indigenous cultures, they will communicate to the river like it's its brother. What a beautiful, mm-hmm. loving way to react to that. So when Gary, he went into the outback in 94 and spent a little bit of time with the tribe, and it really transformed his life, but he came back and started developing these same abilities where he became telepathic. And I didn't know he was telepathic for about the first mm-hmm. year of our marriage, which is quite an interesting situation, but eventually I caught on. He was always very... he was very responsible about being telepathic. He would always ask first on a subconscious basis, is it okay that it talked to you this way? And I thought mm-hmm. it was interesting that the people with autism, the children who were autistic, they mm-hmm. always knew he was communicating to them, whereas most mm-hmm. people did not. The autistic community doesn't have that filter. They were communicating in that realm already. Mm-hmm. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what the brain structures are that make that possible.
That sounds like a question you would have asked.
Well, you know, with all these spectra scans and everything, you can actually look at functional things in the brain now.
Yeah.
It would be very interesting to do a spectra scan on telepathic people during the telepathic process.
Yeah, that
and
would
see
be
what parts of the brain light up that yeah. don't light up, say, with speech.
But
I'm sure there's something there, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, spectra scans are really interesting. You know, it's the information about what part of the brain's working when.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Amen was the first psychiatrist really to look at that. He looked at a whole bunch of patients with anxiety and depression and found there were 7 different types. And the type that was temporal lobe based in young adults and teenagers, if you gave them SSRI inhibitors, they tended to commit suicide.
Wow.
So really, you know, it's to our benefit to understand disease and not treat it the same across the board, you know, because you're inducing suicide in a certain group of people.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, that's what spectra scans do, and it would be very interesting to... Maharishi group was using spectra scans for meditation, you know, to study meditation.
Yeah.
So,
fascinating.
Yeah.
The brain is just a fascinating frontier. I
think
there's so much we don't know. It's going to be interesting as more comes out.
So would you like to tell the listening audience a little bit about your husband and his journey into this outback? Because he was really called there. He was called there telepathically.
On many levels, he was. It was a soul calling. Well, he was a physicist. He was very much a black and white scientist. It doesn't exist if you can't prove it to me. And he had a number of patents. He had about 13 that were all top secret except for one. And he was, you know, very highly respected as a physicist. And he developed multiple sclerosis and became actually a quadriplegic for about 7 years, which meant he had no feeling from the neck down. And his doctors at Scripps Clinic in California told him that he had about 2 years to live. He actually had about 6 months. Things were starting to shut down. His organs were just not functioning. Mm-hmm. And so out of desperation, since Western medicine had nothing for him, he learned about the Aborigines, and it was a synchronicity where he happened to learn about them from a woman. And she happened to know how to get a hold of one of the tribesmen. This tribe is remote, but one of the healers in the tribe had an apartment in Brisbane because his grown children lived there. So he kind of traversed both worlds. And when Gary contacted this man, Ray, he said, "Well, what took you so long? We've been waiting for 4 months." They already knew he was coming. They're still tuned in. So they had been preparing for Gary to come, and he didn't even know about them yet. They had brought in a woman who was part English, part Aboriginal, who they knew could speak to him, and they had been trying to come up with metaphors to be able to teach their healing secrets to him, because they knew they were supposed to give their healing secrets to him because the world needed it. We didn't really understand how healing worked. So he went into the outback. Everybody thought it was crazy. He thought it was crazy, but it, like you know, we said, it was a soul calling. He just knew he needed to go. He went in his wheelchair as a quad with no feeling from his neck down, and he came out 10 days later with feeling in his body for the first time in 7 years, clumsily walking on that airplane, supporting himself on the airplane seats, and really transformed. They had stopped the MS. He no longer had MS. He had the effects of the MS for 20 years, but he no longer had MS. So he started writing that book, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, on that plane ride back, and it dramatically changed his life. He came back and got a doctor's degree in immunology so he could practice what they had taught him. And science might call it psychoneuroimmunology, but he just used that doctor's degree to practice what the Aborigines had taught him, and really spent his entire, he lived 12 years beyond what the doctors told him he would. So, pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. Well, I think what's so remarkable, having read that first book, is that he was able to respond to that call in the condition that he was in.
He was pretty desperate. He was desperate to stay alive. Yeah, he didn't think there was anything left for him, and I think that's I think he thought he would be. I don't think he thought he'd survive the trip in the outback. He brought a voice-activated tape recorder so that he'd had something for his children to know what happened. We used those recordings to actually create the dialogue in the book is actually from the recordings. So I've had people tell me, you know, wow, that's great dialogue for a writer. You did a great job with that dialogue. And I'm like, I can't take credit for that. It's just dialogue because it's real.
Had the tape. Well, it was all, you know, it was all for a greater purpose. I mean, obviously that it was good for him. I mean, very good for him. But it just shows that there is a path out of chronic disease. That's what I tell my patients who come in with cancer. There is a path here out of it. And I mean, sometimes the path out is death. I mean, it's not always, you know, it's not always that you'll live. I mean, sometimes it's somebody's death, sole decision to go out with cancer so their family and everybody can get used to the idea that they're going to die because everybody has a death date. But basically, all of this, I don't care what chronic disease you have, there's always a spiritual path to be followed that you can choose to follow. And if you choose to follow it, really remarkable things happen, synchronicities and miracles and, you know, just all these really amazing things that can, you know, can really help the individual and sometimes, like in your late husband's case, can help the world.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to know, and I really like the way you describe that, that, you know, there is a soul's voice in this. And what the Aborigines have taught us, and you and I both know this is so real, is that we're a body, mind, and spirit. They're all involved in this. And so if the body, mind, and spirit are aligned with healing, you can absolutely heal. And most people can heal. But sometimes, like you said, the soul is done in this particular body. And so it's a way, this disease is a way for them to exit, to let go, and for the family to let go. Or children may come in. And we describe that in the book, Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening. Gary is not the first question we always ask is, are we allowed to intervene? Are we allowed to help? And with children, we rarely got yes, because they deliberately come in. It's part of the soul's experience that they need.
Right.
But most people are not supposed to be getting so sick. Most people need to recognize that their bodies are just crumbling under the emotional weight that they're putting their bodies through. Yeah, but that, there's tremendous hope, absolutely.
And the thing that that I would like to emphasize is that people who are going through this journey, like you say, need to detach a little bit from what's happening to them and not identify so much with being a victim. I mean, I know Gary had to not be that victim. And that was part of what he was taught out there. is that he can't view himself as a victim. And
right.
That's very, very important, because in our normal society, we're in the stance of victim and victimizer.
Mm-hmm.
And we really have to get out of that. And releasing the emotions, my spiritual father was one of the main people advancing the releasing technique. And he went to Australia, he went to South Africa and Germany, and worked with all of these groups, especially in the forgiveness part of it, the South African forgiveness, because so many atrocities had been done there, and in Germany, you know, for World War II atrocities too. So it's very important to release all this baggage, this, you know, blame and shame and all the emotions that keep us kind of down in normal consciousness.
Well, and I think if you take this, and I like how you said step back and kind of emotionally detach, if you step back far enough and get the bigger picture, remembering that we are etheric spirits in a physical body, and that this is a journey of our soul growth and expansion through these experiences, you recognize that there's gifts in there, that we may not have liked some of these things that have happened, but they have really helped us grow tremendously. And again, I almost died twice, and I was in a lot of pain for a long time, physically and emotionally. But that ended up becoming some of the best gifts in my life, because it put me on this path. And the same thing with Gary. He'll tell you that wheelchair was the best thing that ever happened to him, because it just very changed him dramatically. So we change through pain or inspiration, and some of us have to make those changes because it's how bad does it have to get, you know, before we stop, before we recognize what we're doing.
The other thing I wanted to mention is that the soul itself has a journey through time that we need to remember. There's a book called The Psi Prophecy that I always refer to when I'm talking about this. And it was there was a story in The Psi Prophecy about a girl that was standing on a street corner, and a random bullet went into her head and killed her. Like, she was in her 20s. And you would say, oh, that's horrible. You know, it was just kind of like a random thing. She wasn't really meant to be a victim, but she was shot and killed. But then the story behind that is, well, her soul is going to reincarnate in India and be very, very important in this reincarnation of Sai Baba. Because Sai Baba was, you know, has died and is reincarnating again. And she is very important in the protection of the young Sai. So she has to die in order to be present in this other space-time in a very important role, you know, bringing an avatar in and protecting an avatar. You know, that's got to be a very important responsibility for someone. But the point that was made in the Sai Prophecy is she didn't suffer at all. I mean, you get shot in the head, you know, there was no suffering. One minute she was there, and the next minute she was out of her body and really didn't suffer at all. So she was taken out and then reincarnated in India in a particular time frame in order to help, you know, with an avatar's journey. It's a soul decision, you know.
Absolutely.
And so you can't judge that. And it's just an example of, we have timing. We have, you know, we do have a death date. And people don't like to hear that. People don't like to think that their free will is limited. But it is, you know. I mean, from what Deepak Chopra has taught us in the Book of Secrets, with the Rishi Masters having channeled these long things about people's lives 500 years in the future, and every single detail is true, obviously free will has its limits. The birth date is known, all the dates on the marriages and the parents and the children, and then the death date is the last thing on these scrolls. And Deepak looked at his, and everything was right. He said that he didn't recognize his mother's name, because it was different than what she was going by. But then he found out later that that actually was her given name. She just didn't like it. But these scrolls, if these scrolls are real, which they are, I mean, you can handle them, then we have some free will. I mean, I'm not saying we don't have any, but a lot of the things in these scrolls are set in stone,
which is interesting. Yeah, absolutely. There's pivotal moments that are, you know, if you're supposed to marry this person or have this particular job because it's important to people's journey, it's going to happen. Doesn't matter if there's a million people that want that job. This is why you really need to not let the mind wasn't designed to be guiding you to these things. The mind was designed to be of assistance. This higher consciousness within, whether you want to call it the soul or a higher self or even spirit guides, that higher consciousness knows what job, what relationship, how to heal you. The mind doesn't. The mind was designed to be supporting, you know, balancing the checkbook, driving you
But
that's where the answers are within. And I think where people get into trouble is that they let their minds be in charge. And that's a shift that's not going to serve you. And you need to always keep in mind, this is a soul's game, that we love coming here
because
it's a free will planet, which means we can pain and struggle our way through as we learn and grow, but there is some free will to some extent. But yes, there are some things that are we're destined to have, but it's for our soul's growth. And when you recognize that, you don't have quite so much resentment and anger about it.
You have a lot more faith, I think.
Absolutely.
I mean, faith and trust are what I seem to have. I mean, I may not know how something's going to manifest, but when I'm told it's going to manifest, I know that it will.
Right.
I don't have to worry about how. I mean,
right. It just shows.
I don't have to make it happen with my own mind. You know, that's silly.
I'm with you. My job is to keep my mind out of the way. And just allow the guidance to guide me and just keep asking for what I need. I need more clarity. I need more trust. Mm-hmm. I need a better computer. Just allowing it to come to me and following the guidance, which comes from within. Yeah, it's a soul's, definitely, this is here for a soul's growth and expansion. And what an amazing place to do that. And this tremendous contrast allows that. So that's why you can't even judge the contrast. It all serves a purpose. And some of the most evolved souls, because they're more equipped, will take on some of the most challenging situations. Maybe they want to learn and experience deeper levels of self-love. So they may be born into a family where they are not loved. In fact, everything around them tells them they're not lovable. They may have something that society says is not acceptable because they needed to find that love from within. What a brave thing. We're so brave just for being here, to be honest.
Well, there's only a few lessons. Unconditional love is a big one.
Right.
Forgiveness is a big one.
Yeah.
Responsibility. I mean, some people are just learning responsibility. You know, they are learning to become responsible for themselves and others. And then patience. I like to say that I don't know a single surgeon who has patience. we tend to be the most impatient people around.
I've heard that.
You know, it's kind of funny. Medicine doctors have patience. You know, the pediatricians have patience. Psychiatrists have patience, but surgeons are all learning patience.
I really admire it. I'm working on that one, I'm telling you.
Yeah. So, but if you understand what the lessons are, and those are the four main ones, that and some religions, you know, we identify with certain religions. Forgiveness is Christianity. Responsibility is Judaism, you see. There certain religions and institutions emphasize one of these things. And probably Buddhism is unconditional love, you see.
Yeah.
The detachment thing.
Right.
Where you don't judge. Religions, if you're identified with a certain religion, you may be learning one aspect of this thing intently. You know, because the religion itself is focused on that. And I think that is, you know, you can look at your life. I mean, you can look at all the lessons that you have in your life and figure out which one you're dealing with.
And everything is
like right now, you know.
Yeah, everything that comes.
I mean, we all do all of them, but we, you know, forgiveness, like what I tell people is, because I see a lot of accident victims, I say, you know, why don't you forgive this drunk driver that hit your car? Because all you really have is a little bit of medical things you're going to recover from and some expenses. But if you fail to forgive the drunk driver, the drunk driver may hit your child on a bicycle, okay? You see, the stakes go up. Mm-hmm. So exactly. Learn it now when it's less painful.
Exactly. How bad does it have to get before
exactly.
let go? Right.
So
exactly.
So don't be willful now about learning these lessons, because the 2x4 can come down on you, and you know, the cosmic 2x4. And I really think it's easier to learn the lessons when it's not so painful, you know.
Well, that's the hope. I mean, I was I needed a couple 2x4s apparently. But I'm learning a lot faster now. I pay attention to the synchronicities and the signs, and don't need to be told a third time. I can remember so vividly 3 different people telling me within 48 hours, randomly, I needed to be a better driver. And I thought, okay, I get it. I'm paying attention. And that was no accident that 3 different people were telling me from 3 different situations, so that I needed to be more focused and really paying attention to what I was doing.
It's really true.
Yeah.
I mean, these days you can get into trouble on the road. I was at I got a message for myself. I went to see one of the attorneys that is a medium. Okay, he invited me because he was in Atlanta and I was interviewing him on the radio show. And I went, and he was giving a reading for this one woman, and her aunt came through and said, if you don't stop texting, you know, and doing your emails while you're driving, you're going to get in an accident. And this is really serious. But then I'm sitting there thinking to myself, you know, I'm guilty of that too, not texting.
You needed to hear it. Yeah.
You know, but I needed to hear it too, because, you know, I hadn't had anything bad happen, but that hit me like, you better pay attention to this too. We all need to pay attention to this.
Yeah.
I mean, because the temptation is always there to make that phone call or to, you know, to answer that text, or, I mean, you know, with Siri, you're answering it with her voice, so it's not like you're texting, but still doing that can be very disruptive if you fail to see something on the road that requires a quick response, which you can. I mean, depending on what's happening right in front of you, you could miss something very important, like somebody pulling out and you didn't see it in time to brake, or pulling over, you know, somebody who's doing the same thing and decides to pass without looking, you know. So we all need to pay attention to that, because we're all potentially going to be in an accident because we are not totally focused on driving like we used to be.
Yeah, it's definitely different out there. It's not what it used to be. I don't have to commute like I used to, and when I do get on the roads, I'm really amazed how things have changed. The phone, the cell phones really changed the nature of driving.
Yeah.
I think we all needed to hear that one.
Yeah, focused. Exactly.
Yeah, phone down.
So.
Yeah, everything is deliberate. There's no accidents. There's nothing random. That's what I really appreciate from the Aborigines, is telling us, help reminding us, it's all there, and it's there for your benefit. It may not feel like it at the time, but, you know, you're being guided to a better place. You're being guided away from this mind that's creating a lot of pain, and you're being guided to the job that you're asking for, to better health. Just be open and really pay attention to the mind and what it's doing and how it. I have to ask myself sometimes, whose voice is that? You know, that chimes in with its opinion that may not be the best interest for me. Is it the collective? Is it my inner child? Is it my mother's voice? And start paying attention to, you know, whose voice is telling me I need to be pushing so hard beyond what my body is wanting to do, and being more conscious. It keeps coming back to being more conscious, doesn't it? Everything keeps coming back to being more conscious.
I have something interesting to share. I was in the car one day, and the conversation went like this. It says, do you know what your soul sounds like? And I said, no. And the answer is, it sounds like you. puts you at a higher level. But, you know, it doesn't sound different. You know, like your guides and everything can sound very different.
Yeah.
But when you're listening to your higher self or your soul, it sounds like you. I just thought I'd throw that out because it's not obvious that that would be true.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny.
We're amazing. I mean, I really think that people don't realize how brave we are to come to this. It's a hostile planet in many ways, and for an etheric spirit to decide to incarnate in a body and be given emotions, and the body and the emotions are really guiding you with what feels right, what doesn't work, and guiding you back to that center point, guiding you back to that love and bliss within again. But I think just being here is immensely brave. We're choosing to really grow, and this planet offers tremendous opportunities to grow. And that body and emotions will really help you grow so much faster than you could as an etheric spirit. And people need to recognize that. And again, recognize everything is very deliberate. It's placed on your path for a reason. How is it here to help me? Rather than get that mind so hung up and stuck on some of this stuff. That's the key, is to just release the mind stuff. Let it go. Let it go.
And I want to remind people that the relationships that you're in, even the difficult ones, don't disappear when you die. Those relationships continue. We incarnate again, and sometimes not on the third dimension, and sometimes not on this planet. But those relationships continue. So be very careful about betrayal and, you know, dishonesty and, you know, all the things that you might be tempted to do in a relationship, because that relationship doesn't go away. You know,
no,
it's between two eternal beings.
Yes, exactly.
So if you screw somebody over, especially deliberately, you set yourself up for some interesting karma the next time around. So, you know, remember that. You know, you don't carry your bank account out of here. You don't carry your possessions out of here. But you do carry these betrayals out of here.
That's
okay?
True. Yeah.
It's very true.
Which is another reason why you want to heal it, because
you
recognize if
you want to get rid of this, you know, all the negative stuff between you.
Or we could be
and do the forgiveness and do the, you know, do the things you need to do so that you are at peace with this individual.
Right.
Because you will marry them again, or you have them as a child, or you know, whatever.
Absolutely.
So.
And I remember being in one of those situations a couple months ago where I was just feeling a lot of angst with this relationship that I was in with a family member, and I decided I really want to heal this because I don't want to come back and deal with it in a worse way, because it just keeps amping up. And so
I remember
asking, you know, my spirit guides, thank you for helping me heal this. And I immediately felt a wave of compassion move through my body.
Right.
And I suddenly saw things from her perspective and how she was just scared to death.
That's helpful, too. It really is. I do that a lot.
Yeah.
I think that that's putting yourself in the other person's shoes.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. They can go to holzwellness.com, H-O-L-Z. wellness.com, and there's a lot of information we put up there on, especially in the blog section, for people to learn how to heal themselves, how to start working better with their spirit guides, how they communicate. There's just a lot of helpful info. So it's holzwellness.com, and the books are up there, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing and Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening, and there's I do consultations. There's a lot of information, and a free abundance meditation. So there you go.
Great. Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us again, Robbie. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure. Always fascinating with you.
Well, thanks. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week, we have Pia Smith-Orlean and Colin Baird-Smith back on Conversations with Larkema. Larkema is an interdimensional, very wise being that is helping us through the ascension process. And this is important because we're in the midst of it. And then Susan Shumsky on the 25th will be talking about her book, Awakening the Third Eye. And then Sonia Barrett on the 1st of August, Health and Inside Job and Outside Business. Also, I want to remind everybody that we do not have Noetic Science this month. But we will have it the third Thursday of every month other than December. So if you are in Atlanta and want to come to Noetic Science, it's free, and all you have to do is show up or contact the office at hr@plasticos.com for the newsletter, which has all the information on the Noetic Science, as well as the Millennium Healthcare events. So this is Dr. Susan Call with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.